Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahana Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Shri Krishna Sandarbha Adhyayana 4 Adhikarna 1 Description of Goloka, the eternal abode of Krishna. 22. The Paravyoma, Vaikuntha, has got its extension from the display of the four propagating manifestations. Right? So, means from in the four directions. Vasudev, Shankar, Shampadrumna, Aniruddha, then Vasudev, and then Vaikuntha expanding from those four. Does that make sense? It means in Goloka, then in the four directions, in the quadrant, in the square,
yeah.
Then outside Braj, then you have Vasudev, Shankar, Shampadrumna, Aniruddha, and their places. So from them it's expanding Vaikuntha.
Okay. So they stay in an outer part, and then beyond them is Vaikuntha.
Beyond them, in all directions, basically.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, unlimitedly, all directions.
Okay.
And what we say about the yantra?
Yes.
It's inside the yantra, or the yantra can be bigger? Or?
No, they're inside the yantra. It means, in other words, you have a lotus. You have the what do they call it? Pericarp. What's the other? Whirl. Prabhupada uses whirl. The lotus, but you have that middle part, that's where Radha and Krishna is, right?
Yeah.
Then you have the Gopal mantra, you know, in the six-sided triangle, in that. Then around that you have the stamens and the leaf petals,
yeah,
right? And then around that you have the square. You know, it's just like when you make a yantra. Yantra, then you start with the six-sided, like that, and put three circles. I guess that's the lotus, and then after that, then is the square with the doors.
Mm-hmm. So it's like we have downstairs in the garden, it's in the same kind of shape.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good shape.
Yeah, it's very good shape.
Hmm?
Coincidence?
May not be. Yeah, so then they go. Salvation as of Vaikuntha and piety, wealth, and passion pertaining to worldly people are in the proper places in Gokula as their original seed, i.e. primary cause. The Vedas also are engaged in singing the song of the Lord of Gokula. There are 10 tridents and 10 directions to prevent and disappoint those who are aspirants for having an entrance into Goloka through meditations without the grace of Krishna. Self-conceited people who try to reach this region through the paths of yoga, meditation, and jnana, fear of knowledge, are baffled in their attempts, being pierced by the 10 tridents. Self-annihilation has its excellence in Brahma-dham, which represents the outside covering of Goloka in the shape of tridents. That's interesting. Brahman is represented by the tridents. So they may get to Brahman, but that's all the farther they'll get. They will never get beyond that point.
Does it mean, Maharaj, that the tridents, they don't allow them to enter in? They stay outside?
Yeah, the tridents are outside the square, outside the whole yantra.
Okay.
So they're in the 10 directions. So you have the 8 and then up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, then no one can get in. So, because those 8, you know, it means it's, you have up and down, and then the 8 are the directions. So that means these 8 can move up or move down.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's all directions are covered.
Mm-hmm.
Shula means a trident. The mundane threefold attributes and the threefold divisions of time represent the trident. Astanga yogis, i.e. ascetics who practice the eightfold yoga, are the non-differentiative liberationists who, trying to approach in the direction of Goloka, fall headlong into the pits of disappointment by being pierced and cut asunder by these tridents placed in 10 directions. Hmm?
Pits of disappointment.
Yes. It just means disappointment here, meaning that they, you know, they don't. If you say you're disappointed, but if you're in the pits of disappointment, means you're completely, you know, certainly, you know, absorbed and surrounded in disappointment.
Depression.
Yeah, like that. I mean, it just means serious. It means the pit means it's full of. If you say you fall into the garbage pit, means a pit full of garbage. So all you're surrounded by is garbage. Yeah. So in this case, they're only surrounded by disappointment. Those who proceed towards the direction of Goloka through the channel of devotion, alloyed with majestic ideas, are fascinated with the charms of Vaikuntha, which is the outer covering plane of Sri Goloka, at the site of the 8 perfections, namely Anima, etc., and majesties like Mahapadma, etc. Those who are less forward in their intelligence relapse to the sevenfold world, falling under the control of the 10 protectors of the 10 directions, in the guise of mantras. In this wise, Goloka has become unknowable and inaccessible.
Sevenfold world? Material
world? It must be the material world. Because you have the sevenfold means you have the 7 planetary systems.
Or 7 coverings.
Or 7 coverings.
Hmm? 14 planetary systems, 7
means. Okay, yeah, it means be 7 coverings.
Okay.
Like that. Because they all have that, so you fall within sight there.
Those tridents, they are outside of the coverings, isn't it?
They're outside Goloka. The 7 coverings are in the material world. Material world's within Mahatattva. So if they get out of Mahatattva into Brahman, they can't approach Goloka because of the tridents.
I'm just, my question was more, how would they be able to do that, to get up to the tridents, because it's quite close to the spiritual world?
Just through meditation. They might, because the mind can travel and all that, so then you can meditate on that. Like, just like devotees might try to meditate on the pastimes of Krishna and all that. If they're doing it through devotion and through what's recommended, then they can see. But if they try to put themselves into the pastimes and they're not qualified, then they find their meditation doesn't work. You know? Or they're just dealing with illusion.
Okay, so we speak about meditation.
Yeah, that's what I meant before, is that self-conceited people who try to reach this region through the paths of yoga, meditation, and jnana, empiric knowledge, are baffled in their attempts, being pierced by the 10 tridents. Like that. Because they're working on the Brahman platform, so they can't get beyond that. But if there's people that work with devotion, but still, it's, you know, the, what they call it, the alloyed with majestic ideas, are fascinated with the charms of Vaikuntha, which is the outer covering plane of Sri Sri Goloka, the site of the eight perfections, namely anima, etc., and majesties like Mahapadma. Right? So then they go to Vaikuntha, they get distracted there, so they don't get into Goloka. And those who are less forward in their intelligence relapse to the sevenfold world, falling under the control of the ten protectors of the ten directions in the guise of mantras. So then they go back into the material world, you know, and yeah, absorb themselves there. So main point that's being made is Goloka, in this wise, Goloka has become unknowable and inaccessible. Right? So only with pure devotion can you get into Goloka. Mm-hmm. Means you're not interested in the majesties and all that. Maybe sweetness mixed with majesty, but it's still in pure devotion, then you can get to that outer square. But to get into the lotus there, then that has to be pure, unalloyed devotion. So
I'm just trying to visualize because we at this point we study the fifth chapter of Lagu Bhagavatamrita, which also deals with the abodes of the avatars.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean it's a primitive model in my mind, but if we visualize then Goloka is in the center. And there's that space there, the Shvetadvipa, and then outside of that, that's the kingdom of Vaikuntha.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's all in Parivyoma, basically, is that right?
It's all in the spiritual world. Yes.
And then the planets are there and everything. And then there's a portion. It is also within the Parivyoma. But that portion is a material universe. And then within that, you know, there are, there are material planets and everything like that.
Yes, it means you have a portion of the spiritual world is covered by the clouds of ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so the living entities can function because the living entities have chosen not to be aware of Krishna, and so then that means they're in ignorance. So there has to be a place for them because in the spiritual world, no one will appreciate them. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll always be if they're there. Then one of them makes a comment. Then of course, there's going to be kind of someone turning to someone else who invited this guy. You know, so it's just going to be a disturbance. So they are shifted to the material position,
mm-hmm.
right? So then then Mahavishnu, then he breathes out, you have all the unlimited universes and floating on the Viraja, you know, like that. And then within the universes, then that's where all the living entities are. So some may get out of the universe but they're still within the Mahatattva, but then through meditation they may try to get farther.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't enter because there's no bhakti. Or if they are interested in the spiritual platform, but then they're going to be attracted by the majesty. So in other words, anybody who the reason they're going to Vaikuntha is for liberation, you know, any of the four kinds of liberation, they're not going to get to Goloka.
Yeah. So to get out from the material world beyond the seven coverings, we have to cross Viraja,
mm-hmm.
or the causal, ocean, mm-hmm. however they call it. But everything also, I think Srila Prabhupada mentions that everything exists in that Brahman effulgence, in that Brahma Jyoti. So mm-hmm. is that the general space that everything spiritual...
Everything is spiritual. It means the kingdom of God is functioning. It means you have the aspect of The Brahman, which is the existence, so everything exists, so it's all situated in Brahman.
Okay.
Then you have the aspect of the supreme and the controller and all that. That'll be Vaikuntha.
Yeah.
Then you're going to have that full feature of Bhagavan. Then that's going to be in Goloka. But when that still has a touch, you know, a flavor of the that majesty and that being king, you know, the, being God and the kingliness like that, then it's going to be this, that outer portion in Sweta Dweep. And when, then when we're dealing with without that, that just pure Bhagavan in its topmost position, that will be
Gokul.
Yeah. So in other words, when you take Bhagavan, where it's just, I say Bhagavan of Bhagavan, that will be Braj. Bhagavan Paramatma, that will be Vaikuntha. Bhagavan Brahman, that will be Brahman.
Yeah.
I mean, no, that will be, what is it? No, excuse me. That will, excuse me. Paramatma Bhagavan, that will be Durga and that, and you know, within Sweta Dweep, and then the aspect of Brahman Bhagavan, that will be in Vaikuntha. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because they're attracted by all those different things, and it's even it's more the opulences and the existence of those things even than the Lord. When it gets more, then we see. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like that. So the point is any devotee is dealing with Bhagavan. It's just of which feature of that. You could say more, maybe more the Shanta Rasa is more the Brahman aspect of Bhagavan. Then the Paramatma is going to be more the Dasya Rasa, Bhagavan. And then as you go into beyond Dasya, then it'll start having those, that the other, the more aspect of Bhagavan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that more completeness. So then you're going to find that both in Vrindavan and in Dwarka. So Dwarka will be more leaning towards Paramatma aspect. Braj will be leaning more towards the Bhagavan aspect. But the full manifestation of that will be with the gopis. Because it's interesting is that you see Nanda Baba and them, you know, that he's the Supreme Lord, it's not going to be part of their discussion. If it comes up, then we see in those later chapters, then it can be discussed. But, you know, they're not really worried about it. It's not a feature that they would generally use in their discussions. Like that. Though like Vasudeva is discussing, they don't have a problem. But you see is that Shantabhaktas, and that's very prominent. That's what it's all about, is how he's the energies and everything, and how he's expanding everywhere, and all that kind of aspect. So he is everywhere and he's everything. But they're seeing is that how he, the energies is everything, and that way they're connecting to him, and so they don't see, they're never separated from the Lord. Right? But you see also that with the gopis we saw before, Radharani is talking like that. She's talking about all the different incarnations and everything like this. And so that can just be a regular part of their conversation. But for them, it's starting with Krishna and going out to there. And for the others, it's starting with Brahman and it goes to Krishna.
Yeah.
You know, so it makes it to Krishna because they're devotees. But it starts with how he's everything and makes it to Krishna. While others, it means the gopis, and it's Krishna himself. And then these are other features that goes out from there.
Yeah. I mean, it's a matter of perspective, basically.
Yeah, like that. But it's interesting is that these two ends, they encompass them. In the middle, you have the Dasya, Vatsalya, and then Shakya.
Yeah.
Because they're different. You know, but those dynamic aspects are also included in the... So when we say the conjugal, it includes everything. So those ones in the middle, that includes the other, but it's not as important.
Yeah.
So you kind of have those three distinct kind of features of rasa. Between the five rasas.
Yeah. I mean, yesterday we came across in Lagu Bhagavatamrita the first mention of avarnas.
Mm-hmm.
And I was I was trying to explain what it is, because it's a new new term, a new concept, obviously. Mm-hmm. But then if we take that example from Brahma Samhita, so the first Avarana, eight gopis,
mm-hmm.
and means representing her,
mm-hmm.
and then everything expands from there.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, like you mentioned, this is our perspective, that this is the origin, this is Adiras.
Yes. Yes.
Although, you know, if we look from different perspective or even mundane perspective, then, you know, Vatsalya should be the first, and then Madhurja, and then Sakya. But actually it isn't. They expand from that first Avarana.
Yeah. So you'll have that, and then how it goes down from there and expands out, you know, from Radharani, then you have the eight Shakis, and from there you'll have then the, you know, their assistants, and then from, you know, all the other gopis, and you know, the different residents and this and that. And so at one point then it'll get to Dwarka. Right? And then from there it'll get to Vaikuntha. So generally most see it from the Vaikuntha perspective. Even Dwarka, I think, for those from the Vaikuntha Sampradaya, it's just a feature of Mahanarayan. So it's Vaikuntha. They just see it as another aspect of Vaikuntha. They don't see it that it's something within Goloka and that's outside. Vaikuntha's outside. You know, I think they know that there's Mahanarayan, his place, but that's all the farther. I think they can only see that aspect of Vasudeva. They can't see what else is inside.
Yeah. I think also Satyavrata Muni shows that same progression, starting from, you know, in a general, the first mantra, Satchitananda Rupam,
mm-hmm.
and naturally matches it with Shanta.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes a little further, and then he, you know, that was the introduction, and then he asks the Lord to manifest within his mind,
mm-hmm.
which is also, that's what Pipalayana preached to Gop Kumar. He said, don't worry about, you know, time and place, just meditate and it will manifest naturally by your chanting. But Gopa Kumar wasn't satisfied. So then Satyavrata Muni says further, he says, okay, please manifest within my heart. But then it's not good enough for him. Then he says, please manifest before my eyes, mm. as Krishna.
Mm.
So there's Shanta in the beginning and Dasya. Then of course the main part of the prayer is Vatsalya, because it's about Jashoda and Damodar.
Mm-hmm.
But then right at the end he just mentions.
Well, it means you open with the one or the other, because the main is about that Damodar. So as we're saying is that the Samvid, the rasas expanding from them are going to be the central feature, because it's talking about the Vatsalya. But if you, you know, in complete discussion, then you're going to have that of the Shanta and then of the
Yeah.
Because even within Shanta you can see, like Narada Muni comes and sees, he'll meditate within the heart, you know, he'll be thinking about it in the mind, he'll, you know, have the knowledge. So you'll have all those aspects up to there. Then from there then you get into the Damodar Lila, and then mentioning Radharani.
Yeah. Because at the end of the seventh verse he says you gave Prema Bhakti to the sons of Kuvera. So he says, okay, give me also Prema Bhakti. But not any Prema Bhakti. Then he mentions what kind of Prema he actually wants. Which is rarely achieved, like you explained. Only those who go to that Gokul that they can get. Otherwise,
yes, so through the those who proceed towards the direction of Gokula, Goloka, through the channel of devotion alloyed with majestic ideas, in other words, with majesty and that, are fascinated with the charms of Vaikuntha, which is the outer covering plane of Sri Goloka. So they don't get to, because it's all around, so they get fascinated by that, because only in the center of Vaikuntha. Because so we can see, then we put Vaikuntha, you know, on one side, and then there's Goloka, you know, in our painting there's Goloka, and then there's the Vaikuntha around. But that, you know, we're just giving it that, but it'll be in all in around, so that what you're going to see is that.
Yeah.
No? Yeah, so then they'll get distracted by that. And then in that means all the different perfections are there. You know, all the different opulences, all the different, you know, everything is there. In this wise, Goloka has become unknowable and inaccessible. It is only the divine cells of Godhead, propounders of the divine dispensations for the different ages, who are always forward there to favor the approaching devotees, who seek entry into the realm of Goloka through the channel of pure devotional love.
And speaking about avatars, what is
angels?
Only
the divine selves of Godhead.
No, the propounders of the divine dispensation for the different ages,
the avatars? Yeah. I would think the avatars, but also probably the acharyas, mm-hmm. like that. These divine forms of Godhead are surrounded there with attendants of their respective natures.
It's divine forms of Godhead.
You got
that. Yeah, so they're also there. Means everything's there in Goloka. It's just full representation. Sweta Dweep in Goloka is their place of abode. Hence, Srila Thakur Vrindavana, the manifest Vyas of Chaitanya Lila, has described the village of Navadweep as bearing the name of Sweta Dweep. In this Sweta Dweep,
their place of abode, it means they live there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
English.
Yes. So it means you have Braja in the middle, or Gokula in the middle, in the lotus, and then around that in the rest of the yantra, that's Sweta Dweep. So Vasudeva, Shankar, Shankarjuna, Anuruddha have their places in the four directions, and then after that, then the Yuga avatars, they have their places there, because everybody is in Sweta Dweep, because everybody is worshiping the Lord through the process of the age. And so then they can approach Goloka through that avatar, depending on what they want. Like you see the devotees in Dandakaranya, then they're approaching Ramachandra and Treta. And so they're able to get into Goloka, you know, and enter Vrindavan. By the grace of the Yuga avatar. Like that. And so we, through Lord Chaitanya, because it's a Yuga avatar.
Here it's not described, but in Lagu Bhagavatamrita, then within that Sweta Dweep, then it has like more. The first one is the Chaturvyuha, of Krishna's Vyuha.
Okay.
Then the next goes to the 24 forms of Vishnu, then the Dashavatara, then.
Oh, that's going out.
That's going out like that.
Okay.
That's what is described in.
Okay. And the Yuga avatars, are they in one?
Yeah, there's Dashavatara, then somewhere around there. It doesn't describe so detailedly. After that, it should be in there somewhere there. when you describe the dashavataras, then it's like...
So the avaranas are all within Goloka, or that means from Goloka all the way out to the material world?
Because the seventh avarana there, it describes about all the demigods, I mean, original prototypes are there.
Okay, so there will...
That will be the last...
They'll be with Karanadaksha.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Yeah, and then when the sea expands, then you have, you know, them with Garbhadaksha, and they must be with Kiradaksha. You know, because he has his original demigods are there, so as he expands, and they'll also expansions will go.
The original ones are with Mahavishnu?
Yeah, it means they're with Mahavishnu, but also see when Prajumna is there, Garbhadaksha, then he also has those primordial demigods. So they're there in Brahma's on the lotus, Lakshmi's there, you know, serving the Lord and all that, and then within that, and then I'm sure in Swetadweep with Kiradaksha, he has those demigods. Because you see, the demigods can't go to where he is, so the primordial is serving, but there'll be expansions of Prajumnas, who are expansions of Kiradakshas, who will be expansions of, you know, who's with Sankarshan. You know, and then they'll go back to the eight gopis.
And Sankarshan is Mahavishnu?
Sankarshan expands as Mahavishnu. Like that. He'll be his origin. Like that. It's all very...
interesting.
Yeah. Because there's so many features of it. And so... it's all everything together. So when you're explaining, you'll be discussing this aspect or that aspect. You know, let's say you have a very complicated recipe. You can discuss certain aspects of the flavor of it, or certain aspects. You can talk about the technique. You can talk about different things, but all of that, when you're cooking, all of that will be there in your head at once. But when you explain it to someone else, you have to explain it in these particular lines, these themes. So therefore then these themes will be described, and in that theme it may have a prominence of one or a prominence of something else, or does that make sense? So it looks like that they're overlapping or things like that, because they're all talking about the same thing. It's just a different feature of that. Because you mentioned about the primordial demigods, those would go all the way back to Vrindavan. Like you see, Sridhama is Garuda, and I think it's Sudama is Hanuman. I think it describes somewhere. You know, so that's why they're always with Krishna and Balaram, you know, when they go out. You know, they're the ones that are always with the Lord. You know, and so like that, then they all have their places there, but all these, they're all expansions from the eight gopis who are expanding from Radharani. But at the same time, as those go out that way, but you still have Radharani to the Astasaki too, when you have Vishnu, that he has the eight Shaktis. You know, you have Shri, Hri, and all those, Pushti, and remember there was all eight like that.
Yeah.
So six are the six opulences, and then two more like that. And so the six opulences are coming actually from, you know, those Lakshmis, which means it comes from. So, of the six opulences, that means of the eight gopis, then, what do you call it? Six of them are going to be made, the prominence of one of those. Does that make sense? And then there's two. Right? So it makes the eight. So there's something, I can't remember what it was. What was the difference between the six and the two? Because the two were there, but there was something extra. You remember that? You remember where it was?
Mm-hmm.
Remember it vaguely? Because it was something, I think it was last year.
Yes.
So it probably would have been in the Sandarbha somewhere.
If it didn't the Sandarbha, then it would have
been Paramatma Sandarbha. Yeah, it would have been there. I remember it was something talking about that. It was So all that. So you can go from there and just see the Shaktis going, you know, from the queens, the gopis, and the queens of Dwarka, and then the you know, the queens and with the Shaktis of the queens with Vaikunthapati. But you have Radharani, then you have Rukmini, then you have Lakshmi. Does that make sense? Yeah. And you also have then the prominent, because Lakshmi, then it's Sri and Bhu. So then you're going to have that aspect there also. Then, you know, then you have Sri Bhu there, then you have Radharani, Valdita, Vishaka. Then with Rukmini, then you're going to have that aspect. Satyabhama, and then some of the. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So there's going to be those, that line, but then you also have everything's coming from those. So that's the thing, is that all those things are all happening. So they're expanding themselves and keeping basically that same main principle of the personality. But it gets taken into sweetness, into mixed sweetness and majesty, into majesty. Right? And then there's a reflection of that, you know, from then Rama Devi, how that comes into the material world, then how then Durga will be dealing with all those potencies. Right? But at the same time, you have how they expand out, and then you get everything else that's there. All the different aspects and features and all. Does that make sense? You know, because otherwise you get Sridhan, like I said, Sridhan, Sridhan like this. But then you also have them going just as the feminine aspects. So that's the difficulty, is when you're explaining these, you'll be taking one particular line and explaining it. Because otherwise, maybe after you know all of them, then you can start to explain them together and how something goes, and you'll see the connections between them, because you already know the lines, and then you see how they're unfolding. And so from here, as you're going to get one, it's going to come down and like that. Then you're going to get across, and then again, and then come down. So does that make sense? So in that way, you can say, so Sri Dham is, you know, then that expands, and then you get Garuda. But at the same time, as you'll get, you know, the gopis will become the queens, and then from there it'll expand. But they're technically expanding here, you know what I'm saying? But it's coming from the queens, just like you have all the Vishnus, right, the 24 Vishnus, but it works by Sankarshan expanse. Then from there you get everything else, and then from there it all comes out. And then for the next group, is Sankarshan expands again, and then all those come. But you could say those are all Sankarshan, those are all Prajumna, Aniruddha, these are all Keshava and Shinga. So you have that aspect, but at the same time as you have, you know, how it's... Does that make sense? Because if you're explaining the one, you may not see the other. When you explain the other, you may not see this one. So then we get confused. No, but where did they come from? This is how it's working. They're both, things are happening at once. And then you have the Icha Kriya and Jnana. You know, it's because of Krishna's desire, that's why it's happening. You know, and then Balaram's taking care of that, and then you know what I'm saying? Then the situation. Yeah. Because otherwise, then what happens, as you see, is that from Icha Shakti is coming, you know, is all the Lord's associates, the Dham, the pastimes, everything like this. Then at the same time, it mentions that the Kriya, then that's where you see the manifestations of, you know, the spiritual world, the material world, everything like that. All the Vaikuntha planets, everything is coming from there. Right? And the same time, as you see, is that the Sandini, you know, or the Jnana, then in the Jnana Shakti, then that's the basis of the what do you call it? The moods and everything like this, and all things like there. So the Sandini in that position, that's where the actual forms are manifesting. Right? So it's because of Krishna's desire that they're happening. It may be mechanically carried out by Sandini or Sandit. But the point is because of his desire, it's happening. Does that make sense? So if you're explaining that one line, you see it working in you know, you will get an idea of it in one way. But when you describe it from the mechanics of it, it looks as, it appears as if it's something different when it's not.
Yeah, this is the difficulty we faced yesterday in class as a student, and then we got lost because there was an explanation of Paravastu comparison in Nrisimha Rama and Krishna, how Krishna is the supreme, means he is the origin, and then Rama and Nrisimha come from him.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was an example that the sages were attracted to Ramachandra, but then they achieved, you know, that relationship only with Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So the confusion was, how come they wanted Ram, but they got Krishna? So I was trying to explain on the basis of Lagu Bhagavatamrita that Rama is within Krishna, that feature. So what actually attracted them, Rama in that avatar as Maryada, he couldn't supply them that, you know, that kind of relationship. So they found it only in Krishna. But they couldn't get it. So that, like you explained now, I just realize it now, that the difficulty, that the extension of feminine,
mm-hmm,
it's one way.
Mm-hmm.
The extension of masculine, you know, all the Vishnumurtis, mm-hmm, and everything, it's a different line. But in certain personalities, in most everybody, those who extend down, it's combination of both.
Mm-hmm.
So that is,
means the feminine will be feminine, then the Vishnu forms will be masculine, but you also have the aspect is the masculine associates, they're going to be actually expanding from the feminine.
Exactly. This is the main difficulty, because when we go into the world of demigods and you know, those personalities, mm-hmm, I mean, before Vishnumurti, it's kind of obvious. And if we follow the feminine line, like you explained, you know, Radharani, then Rukmini, then Lakshmi, mm-hmm, then Durga, then, you know, like that,
mm-hmm,
it's kind of, it's, yeah, okay. But then we go into so they have both.
Mm-hmm.
They expand, but then they have the potency is coming from Vishnu,
mm-hmm,
technically.
Yes. Well, because that's what Shakti is. Shakti means the potency. But then within that, there'll be a manifestation of the feminine, there'll be a manifestation of the masculine. Because we have to remember, the energies are Krishna's. So using the energy in a feminine way, you'll have feminine form. Using the energy in a masculine way, you'll have the masculine form. But it'll all be for the pleasure of Krishna. Because in the material world, you have the forms here, but then everybody thinks they're Purusha. So they're using the masculine form to be Purusha, they're using the feminine form to be Purusha. So everyone's controlling. Right? So that's the thing, is that how you say that the Isha is thinking they're controlling and the Isha is controlling. No?
Yeah.
So that's the so there's always that kind of thing, because it's Krishna. Krishna is one. He's non-dual. So that's why Achinta Beda Beda Tattva, you can start to catch. There is differences, but there's no difference in the differences. They're one in that they're all together. It's just like, let us say you have a meal. It'll have the variety within it, but it's still all just the meal.
Yeah.
You know, if you go and says, you know, is the preparation the meal? Yes, that's the preparation. So this one's not the preparation. No, it's also the meal. But how can they both be the meal? That has to, you know, that's the thing, is we limit ourselves because we have this. We have our own logic that we use in the material world, and so therefore, that's why it's a problem. That's as you get purified. In Bhaktivinoda Thakura, he's mentioning it because, like we say, we have lines that we're explaining. So, we if we say Shraddha to Prema, you know, and that, so there's nine stages, right? There's eight steps to get there. So Shraddha is the basis. So you see what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing it. Shraddha is the, if you don't have Shraddha, it doesn't start. So it's kind of like the prerequisite. Then with Shraddha, then the first step is Sadhu Sangha. So that will be difficulty also just there, because we'll be looking at it. No, Shraddha is the first. No, but without Shraddha, you don't have the process. Right? So then, having the process, now it's just like, let's say we want to go shopping. Okay? What's the first step? You're sitting in your house. Yeah. You know, what's the first step? Yeah, you have to leave the house. So that you've left the house, you can say, okay, that's the first step. You know, that you got your car, that's the second step. That you're actually going down the road, the third, you get there to the market, like that. But can you step out of the house? Can you start the process if there's no money? You can. Hmm? No, but I'm saying there still has to be some concept of money. Right? Without that, you can't start. So Shraddha, so that way there's only eight stages of progression. Though there's nine positions. Because the first one's not a step. That one, without that, you can't take the step. Right? So, you know, that's, we're used to just, there's these nine ones, and that we're cool with that. And you do the one, you move to the next, because we think in that linear. But Prabhupada, you see, is mentioning, and here and there the acharyas are mentioning, that Prabhupada says specifically, prema is mature shraddha, mature faith. So in other words, when you have, let's say just for example, one unit of faith, it's called shraddha. When you have two units of faith, it's called sadhu sangha. When there's three units of faith, you call it bhajana kriya, four anartha nivriti, five, and stuff like this, until you get all the units, then it's called prema. Right? So even that we can kind of, okay, you know, that we've heard a bit. So but Bhaktivinoda Thakur in this one discussion is talking about, he's talking about prema, attaining prema. So that means, in, you know, on the platform of bhava, not like that, down. But how are you going to get there? It's only when, because why isn't there bhakti? Because we're distracted by material desire, right? Karma and jnana. So only as you purify karma and jnana from your life, you know, from the heart, then bhakti becomes, you know, prominent. So when you've removed to the point where bhakti becomes prominent, that's called nishta. Right? Because before that, then karma and jnana are quite strong in the life of the neophyte. He gets easily distracted and, you know, takes positions based on that. Well, you know, unless, you know, we're all good and nice, you know, how are we going to have bhakti? Or, you know, yeah, you can't, you know, how can you drink milk from a cow, you know, that's not as ahimsa like this? You know, Krishna won't accept that milk, you know, when, why won't he accept it? You know, basically because I said so. Because in my mind, that morality is reality and bhakti is not. And so therefore, it's only because it fits my moral compass, therefore it's bhakti. And Krishna only accepts bhakti, so he won't accept this milk because it's not bhakti as I define it. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, oh, the priest did something wrong, so he was never a priest, he's not a priest, never will be a priest. It's like, no, he's doing, but he gets distracted. But because we take morality more important than that devotion, therefore, as long as devotion matches our morality, then they're okay. But as soon as it's, you know, it's just like we were discussing one time, the pujari's there, he's been there for 10 years, and doing that, and he's, you know, and it's full-time pujari, so it's just morning to evening he's doing that, and he's been doing it for 10 years. Somehow or another, he's in the, you know, where you have the deities, and you have that pujari room where they, you know, most places it's small. It's not like here where we have one room for one thing. You know, and there is that you have where the paraphernalia is made, where you wash the dishes, where you do everything. You know, everything's done there. And so then at some point, you know, then there's some brahmacharini is in there washing dishes or doing something, right, preparing something. And so he gets distracted. And then, you know, things don't go in an ideal progression, right? And so then devotees, when it came up, somebody mentioned that means he was not a Brahmin. I say, you know, so what did you do? Oh, we kicked him out. They said, why did you kick him out? Because he's a pujari. He said, no, but because he did that, he's not a Brahmin. So you're only a Brahmin if you never do anything wrong anywhere and you meet all the criteria. That me, who is not a Brahmin because I don't follow any of that criteria, I have a moral concept that, you know, I'm only going to accept someone and respect them as you know, superior to me as a Brahmin because he does all this and he has nothing wrong with him at all. No one can find any. But as soon as we find one fault, he's not a Brahmin. Not that he's a Brahmin and there's this fault. You know, it'd be just like you have a chunk of gold and then somebody drops some chutney on it. It's not gold anymore. Because gold is bright, shiny, no spot, nothing. But as soon as that chutney hits, it's not gold. That's the kind of intelligence we're dealing with here, because of attachment. So our vision gets so clouded. That's the difficulty. Before you get to nishta, this can be a big problem for an individual. It may be in general not a problem. You see they go very nicely in their service and working with Vaishnavas and doing the thing. But if something comes up that goes against an important aspect of morality in their mind, then it all goes out the window because it's all based on their morality. You're only good if you do this, not if you're devotional. That's what's good. These other qualities are very useful and helpful in bhakti because in the spiritual world, all the people have them and they use them in devotional service. So here in the material world, it's also natural they'll be used in devotional service. But it's bhakti that is the source of these qualities. But here it's taking, no, bhakti is, these qualities are the source of bhakti. Without these, you can't do bhakti. You understand? It's reversed because of ignorance. Our own attachments. It's a very subtle, you know, subtle point. So then he's mentioning when a Narta Nivriti comes to, you know, a good point, then you're convinced that only by devotional service, not by any other process, not by karma, jnana, yoga, can we get, you know, bhakti. Bhakti is independent. So I want to learn about bhakti. That's nishta. Right? So if you have that conviction, then you're fixed in devotional service. And as we were discussing a few days ago, then Prabhupada, how he's envisioning it, second initiation means now you're fixed in bhakti because you've committed to the process of bhakti. And so then that's nishtha. So then devotees is something to attain. When anartha nivriti gets reduced, it means the purification is more, then it comes to ruchi. Right? Because then you give up any interest in the taste of the material world. Before it's that you have no interest in any other process. Right? But there still may be distraction by tastes. But, you know, you're steady in your devotional service. As you get more purified because of that steadiness, now it's only the taste of devotional service. Then more purification, then it's attachment. Because we have the taste, but there may be other attachments. But now, no, the attachment goes towards Krishna. Right? Then more purification, then you get to Bhava. So Rupa Goswami, then you see the acharyas, then when they're talking about anartha nivriti is complete, they mean it's at that point. Because now all the material mundane has been removed. And now there's no mundane. You've come to the neutral point. Right? And Bhava. So now you have to move forward in the positive to prema, because prema is positive. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The Brahma Bhuta is the neutral. I mean, bhava means it's starting positive, you know, because you've already had that that's there. But the point is it hasn't come to, it's not sustainable. Right? It means prema is the natural position where then you're qualified to take part in rasa. Before that, then you don't have the qualification, but there's the interest in it. So therefore, it's considered the first stage of priti. But ras, tasting rasa, that comes from being qualified for prema. Right? Does that make sense? And so then within that prema, then there's different levels, you know, depending upon what's there. So what I'm meaning here is the definition he's giving is showing how you're purified from being overwhelmed by the material world, and now you come to the point of shraddha, by the association of devotees. Then, as you get more, like, so he was showing it through purification, how you go up through the stages. Then, when it's exclusively about Krishna, so in other words, purification means it's just about Krishna, nothing else. Because we see the process. You're getting rid of karma, jnana, and all that, other tastes, other attachments, other, like that, other position stuff. Then you're talking about the transcendental, it's only Krishna. So when it's exclusive, then it comes to prema. You know. So that's why you see Bharat Maharaj, it was the Lord, you know, on the platform of Bhava, and this deer. But he was seeing the deer as the soul, the living entity, and you know, Uttamadakar, you see everybody as devotees and all that. But still it wasn't exclusive. He wasn't seeing the deer completely in the context of the pleasure of the Lord. And so then, you know, for someone on that platform, it's a fall down. For us, it's like, you know, how you say, how does it go? You should be so lucky, right? So it's just, it's showing, because Bhagavan is showing everything up to, and also then the gopis, and then other, so it brings to the topmost point. You know, and then we see Lord Chaitanya discussing about the Brahma Gita and things like that, that feelings of separation. So it's bringing up to the, it's exclusive. It's not about, so they can't even say, we won't discuss about Krishna anymore. You know, why should we discuss about him? He doesn't care for us, we don't care for him. In this way, all our anxiety is coming because of thinking of Krishna, so we'll stop thinking about Krishna. But then the next point, that means we can't stop thinking about Krishna. That, then they go off on another angle and just absorbed in Krishna. Yeah. So in this we can see is that each one of these, like we're talking about Shraddha to Prema is just nine positions, okay, then it's just about catching and what does each one mean and getting the definitions. And that may take some time to become familiar and all that. But, you know, it's been around since the mid-90s, so kind of devotees are a bit okay with the concept. Right?
Yeah.
But then explaining it, how it's the deepening of faith, then that's going to be another angle. But that's what's going on. At the same time, is because you have more faith in Krishna, you're giving up faith in anything else. That's an artha nivritti. So it's just like always remember Krishna means never forget. So always remember, that's developing the faith side. I'll never forget, that's the anatta nivritti side. So they're all going together. So you look at one, you look at the other. Does that make sense? You know. Were we discussing the thing about the? Yeah. Yeah, I guess something. So does that make sense? So that's the only thing is devotees have to know is they're looking at it from one particular angle. So vichar means looking at it from different angles. So there's not one angle. I mean, this ultimately, that's prema. That's the angle. But otherwise, then they're going to have these features is that it's going to be about Krishna and the devotees. You know, so they don't have to worry is that when you're dealing with Krishna on the platform of prema, all these vantage points aren't necessary. They're already included in prema.
Yeah.
You know? like that. But until we get to there, then we may be absorbed in these different aspects, and taking any one of them you can absorb. Like you see, devotees have to great advanced in devotional service just understanding the nine positions that are there from Shraddha to Prema. You know, and identifying that, you know, yes, I have to, you know, by knowing the definition of each, they can tell where they are and what's the weakness of the one and how to bring it to the next. Just that is, it works. That's why you see in the Vedas, when they mentioned they call it Vini Yoga, when the details of the mantra, you know, what style it's in, you know, who's the rishi, what its purpose is, like that. So they describe what it is, you know, it means technically and mechanically, you know, by grammar what it is, who's the rishi of it, you know, in other words, who is involved, and what's the goal of it. Right? So the rishi then is the person who's become perfect by absorbing themselves in that mantra.
Yeah.
So sometimes the rishi, there's just one mantra. Sometimes it's a group of, like Rishi Shukta will be a group of mantras.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So like that, but does that make sense? You know, sometimes you just think about one mantra.
Yeah.
And just on that you can progress. Or you may think of a whole group of prayers, you know, like Kunti's prayers, all of them, and then sometimes you're thinking of this or that, but in any case it's always absorbed. And so in that way then you're developing. So it doesn't matter. So no one needs to get worried about it, but the point is it's the process to try to understand, to study and try to understand under the direction of others. So, yeah. So they shouldn't be bewildered at that, you know, but we thought it was this. Yes, that is there, and this is here. You know, it means that is the meal, and there are plates and cups. Okay, we can accommodate that. And there's also all the silverware. Oh no, another thing. You know, how many things are here in this meal? And there's a tablecloth. You know, where's this going to end? And there's a table. And there's chairs. And there's a floor. And the floor is on walls. And walls go all the way down to the foundation. Foundation's on the earth. Earth is sitting on top of, you know, who's it sitting on top? You know, I mean, ultimately Sesha. But before that, it's sitting on, I think, the turtle. Yeah, and then that's on the four elephants. And then that's on that goes on Sesha. You know, and Sesha is then, you know, is dependent on Songarshana, who's dependent on you know, how you say, Vasudeva, who's dependent upon Balaram, who's dependent on Krishna.
That happens on Kuru or the opposite?
Are?
On the tortoise or the opposite?
Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe it's the tortoise. No, I think tortoise is on the bottom. The elephants are
on the
bottom. Because it's when the elephants, you know, decide to scratch their back or something that we get earthquakes.
Elephants, not the tortoise?
No, he gets his back scratched with the Mandara Mountain pastime. The elephants, you know, because they can just... Here, our elephants, you can't get any idea of festival elephants. They're always moving and like that, they'll be there. And sometimes you have to be very careful like that. But you see, if you see South Indian temple elephants, when they stand there, they're like a statue. They don't move. And even if they do, let's say their leg itches, they'll slowly lean, you know, to where there's no weight over here. They don't just go and lean like this. They lean very carefully. Then they'll scratch their leg with their other leg. Then they'll put the leg back, and when it's in place, then they'll slowly go back like that.
They've been trained?
Yeah. Means you can train them. But you have to have people who train elephants for festivals. We just have mahouts that just take care. You know, so they take care and they're healthy and that. And, you know, that they stand in place. But you see a lot of things. They have to really be holding them back in that. But these other guys, the mahout, it's not necessarily has to be that close. He'll generally be right there because they're close. But it's not that he has to be holding him in place. They're just walking, and how they walk, you know, it's also just smooth. They don't do this with the head.
Like that.
Yeah, like that. That's why there's kinds of elephants. So one of them is the temple elephant. So they have certain bhakshanas, and then they can do all that very easily. So technically, any elephant you could be engaged. You know, like we're engaging. But the temple, like before the Gulab Kali, she was a temple elephant. Like that. So you didn't see that with her, you know. And we also had a guy here, one of those South Indian guys that trained the festival elephants. But he came specifically for training. We had a small male elephant, you know. Because, you know, like when the two elephants, the smallest one, when it was really small, how big it was, it came that time. And so I remember him sitting there one day, the guy would have, he'd have his little, that little wooden stick, little bamboo stick, you know, smooth, made smooth and all that. And that, and he had a garland, you know, one of, let's say, Nrisimhadeva's garlands or something. Maybe not that big, but one of the gopis' garlands. And he'd hold up the garland. He, you know, like this, so it's like this. He'd just sit there, hold it up like this. The elephant, it's a garland. He'd grab it with the trunk immediately and then swing it to go into his mouth, because they grab it here, swing one end to the mouth, and then chew on it, right? You know, it's like you pick up a piece of pizza. You don't put this end in your mouth, you put the other end in your mouth, right? So he'd grab it and he'd swing it. And as soon as he'd try to do that, the guy would take it and whack his trunk with a stick. He'd drop the garland, pick up the garland, like this. The guy would grab it, to swing it, whack. He'd do that day, all day.
And what he wanted.
And but the fun part was, within a week, that elephant could garland a person with the garland. Because he started that because it was somebody told him that, I think that Bhavananda Maharaj was coming, like that. And so, because he arranged all the elephants, he was like that. So then, because that was an interesting thing. The Mahouts say that the elephant knows who the boss is. They know who the owner is. They know who the owner is. They can tell who's the owner and who's this and that. They can tell. So they have a special relationship. So then, you know, they thought, okay, let's treat him like that. So in a week, they had the little elephant, you hand the garland, he takes the garland, doesn't try to eat it, and when you come, then puts it, you know, over the head, you know, perfectly. Not, you know, boxy, and like this. It's just they perfectly put it.
Was he impressed?
Yeah, he was. Everyone was impressed. You know, it's like, whoa, you know, so that was the idea, was then train him. So Gulab Kali was there, but, you know, because he was bigger and older, then when he grew up, he would be the main elephant, and then Gulab would be the second elephant. You know, it's like we have now, because a lot of times they go with more elephants and all that. I think in Guru Vayur, they go with three elephants. So when they stop, now they stay in a line, but then, and then when afterwards, then they come when I think do Artik and that stuff like that. But they're right next to each other, but they would stand like in formation. But the three, they walk in a line, and then when they stop, the main one stops. You know, for doing the Artik, the other two come up on the side.
Wow, that's majestic.
Yeah, no, it is.
I heard that's the daily procession, but on a festival day, then they have like 14 or 15.
Yeah, well, if they're doing a big one. Daily is that, but they do five elephant processions a day. So the night one is the big one, like that with three, and I think during the rest of the day they're all done small. So they just go around like that, but the night one, that's 3 hours, but the mornings, other ones are shorter. But yes, when they have a big festival, then all the temples bring all their elephants, and then you sometimes see like that, 14, 15, or 50 elephants all in a line, all with the full things and all the mahouts there. And yeah, you know, they all have the thing and they all, you know, do it with the trunk, and it's a big thing. They all have the, you know, the umbrellas and the chamaras and that whole thing. It's a big thing. In Kerala, it's like, you know.
They have
that.
Big courtyards like this, so that.
I mean, for the festival.
Yeah. No, they'll go out to big places and do stuff.
So there's a jungle to maintain this elephants.
Because they're the coconut tree branches. The South Indian elephants, you know, they eat that. And then you also give them some rice and ghee. But that's what they eat, like that. But the North Indian ones, they're picky. They have to have all the different variety and this and that and so many things. They won't just eat anything, you know. The South Indian ones, they'll just eat. That's their main diet, is that. And then if you have other things, then it's nice. You know. So you just put a bunch of those there, and they're happy for the day. They just sit there because they take them, they whack them, they stomp on them, you know, break them up, and then they chew on them. You know, it's a...
And those are the South Indians that are here? The two elephants?
They're North elephants. You see that they have the bumps on the head? Like that. That's, I think, the main thing where you can tell the difference. South Indians don't have those bumps. It's more smooth. They South Indian elephants look more attractive. They have a more beautiful kind of face. But, you know, because they don't have those bumps, they're not quite as smart. The North Indian elephants are more smart because they have a bigger head. You know, they have those bumps of it. They're more smart.
So bumps means more smart.
More brain, yeah.
Bigger hat.
Yeah, so, you know, and then, yeah.
Like for people with bigger forehead.
Yeah, it means more intelligence. Yeah, like that. So that's what, so these are just Mahamsa saying, all this stuff. So. Yeah, so, like that. Yeah, so the main thing is it's just vichar, just they have to understand, it's another angle. So start it from the where they were and then bring it to what it is, then explain the new things. Does that make sense? Otherwise, if someone gets distracted because it's a new thing, just show where that new thing connects to what they know. Just make that connection, then start on it. And if they can't understand the connection, work on the connection until they do it. Then... Yes, they have to have a frame, because you can only learn by a frame of reference. That's why someone, let's say, has no frame of reference of spiritual life can't understand at all. Like that, you have to refer to something that they can understand, something that they can see a progression to. You know, like that. You know, it's just like say, all they know is money, but what's the progression of money? And what would be the ultimate? You know, oh, it would be this, you know. But then you point out, okay, that's great. But then, what about the point of that? Life is temporary, and you're going to die, and you don't take that money with you. So then, what about that? That's what we're dealing with. Then it kind of like, oh, okay. Because the thing is, you know, where's the money? Where's the this? Why are you guys doing this? And you understand is, even you get the money, what about this? You know, because even they worry about the legacy. Okay, I've made this empire, but then who's going to continue the empire? Because they don't just do it, and then they do it when they die, then everybody fights over it, and you know, it falls apart. They want to hand it over to somebody, or, you know, some way, or give it to a charity, or something that it's going to be, there's going to be a legacy. You know, but what about, you know, that? How can you get, no, so that's why then the spiritual. So you just have to kind of some point of reference. Hence, Srila Thakura Vrindavan, the manifest Vyasa of Chaitanya Lila, has described the village of Navadvipa as bearing the name of Sweta Dweep. In this Swetadweep, the concluding portions of the pastimes of Gokula exist eternally as the pastimes of Navadvipa. Hence, the region of Navadvipa, Braja, and the realm of Goloka are one and the same in indivisible entity. The difference only lies in the manifestations of the infinite variety of sentiments, corresponding to the diverse nature of their devotional love. So there's only the difference. It's where they're focusing in that between Navadvipa, Braja, and the realm of Goloka. Right? They're one entity, but at the same time is that there's differences, infinite variety of sentiments. So then, so in one area something's more prominent, another area another's prominent. So that's why you can use the names Navadvip can call Swetadvip, but it's also non-different from Vraj. You know, Vraj can be called Goloka, you know, like all these aspects. Goloka can be called Goloka, you know. There is in this a most hidden principle which only the greatest souls who are who are possessed of the highest transcendental love are enabled to realize by the direct gaze of Krishna. The truth is as follows. The truth is as follows. In this mundane world, there are
a lot of electricity problems.
Yeah, no, but I was just going to say, I couldn't say what I said. This truth is as follows, and then I had to take think. Then the next one, then the electricity. So take it, this is serious, right? In this mundane world, there are 14 spheres disposed in the graded order of high and low. Right? So you go from the 14, from the lowest to the highest. So Patala on one end, Brahmaloka on the other. Persons living with wives and children, hankering for the pleasure-giving effect of their fruit of actions, move up and down within the limits of the three worlds of Bhu, Bhuva, and Swa. Brahmacharis of great austerities, ascetics, and persons addicted to hypothetical truth, right? Another mental speculators. Persons of a neutral disposition, adopting non-fruitive works by an aptitude which seeks to be free from all mundane desires, move up and down within the limits of the world, worlds of Maha, Jhana, and Tapa, and Satya. Right, so those who are renounced. So, Bhur Bhuva Swa, they move up to there. Right above Swa, you have the Satya Loka, which is, you know, Maharjana, Tapa, and Satya. Right, it's that whole scene. So that's only for those who are being detached from sense gratification, from fruitive activities. Above these worlds lies the abode of four-headed Brahma, above which lies the unlimited realm of Vaikuntha of Vishnu, Kirudakshai, lying in the ocean of milk. Paramahamsa sannyasis and demons killed by Sri Hari by crossing the Viraja, i.e. by passing beyond the 14 worlds, enter into the luminous realm of Brahman and attain to Nirvana in the form of temporary abeyance of the temporal ego. Right, so just temporarily then the mundane ego goes away from them. But the devotee actuated by knowledge, jnana bhakta, the devotee actuated by the pure devotional aptitude, shuddha bhakta, the devotee imbued with loving devotion, prema bhakta, the devotee actuated by pure love, prema para bhakta, and the devotee impelled by overwhelming love, prema tura bhakta, who serve the majesty of Godhead, have their locations in Vaikuntha, i.e. the transcendental realm of Sri Narayana. That's interesting. Prema Bhakta. That's a loving devotion, Prema Bhakti, pure love, overwhelming love, and that's there in Vaikuntha. The devotees who are imbued with all love and who walk in the footsteps of the spiritual maze of Braja alone attain to the realm of Goloka. The different locations of the devotees in Goloka, according to the respective differences in the natures of their rasa, i.e. mellow quality. I think after that quality should be a comma, by the looks of it. No? are settled by the inconceivable power of Krishna. Right, so depending upon their moods, then Krishna arranges where they're going to go. So that's the quality of the mellow. So someone can say as, oh, but if I want to change, then yes, even if that was a thing, but Krishna would settle you in a different place according to the mood. So I want to do I want to be into this rasa, you'd be settled there. If you want that, you'd be settled in a different situation. So it's not that I will maintain the same situation, but I will have all these different facilities. You know, I just expand my facility. You know, it's just like, you know, you have your house in New York, and then you have also in L.A., and then in London, and Paris, and Milan, you know, like that. And then, you know, one maybe, you know, some island somewhere or something nice, you know. So, no, it's not like that. It's that you have that rasa with Krishna, you'd be fixed in that place. Because Krishna being all perfect and the devotee being in that mood, then it's perfect in itself, it's complete in itself. Because we're looking at it that rasa may not be complete for me. But the point is no, rasa is complete. Everything coming from Krishna is perfect and complete. So that rasa is also. Because he is rasa. So at any point you can taste. The pure devotees following the devotees of Vraja and those following the pure devotees of Navadvipa are located in the realm of Krishna and Gauras, respectively. The identical devotees of Vraja and Navadvipa simultaneously attain to the pleasures of service in the realm of Krishna and Gaura. Sri Jiva Goswami writes in his work Gopal Champu that, quote, the supreme transcendental realm is called Goloka, being the abode of Go, transcendental cows, and Gopa, transcendental cow herds. This is the seat of the rasa pastimes of the absolute Sri Krishna. Again, the realm is called Svetadvipa, owing to the realization of some of the rasas, which are inconceivable manifestation derived, where are the inconceivable manifestation derived from the untouched purity of that supreme realm. The twofold entities of the supreme Goloka and the supreme Svetadvipa are indivisibly the realm of Goloka. End quote. The gist of the whole matter is this. Goloka, as Svetadvipa, is eternally manifest because the pleasures of enjoyment of the rasa could not be had in its entirety in the pastimes of Krishna in Vraja. He accepts the emotion and effulgence of his predominated moiety. I think again that needs to come on. Sri Radhika, and makes an eternal pastime for the enjoyment of Krishna Rasa there. Sri Krishna Chandra, coveting to taste the following pleasures, namely, to realize one, the nature of the greatness of love of Sri Radha, two, the nature of the wonderful sweetness of his love, of which Sri Radha Hika has got the taste, and three, the nature of the exquisite joy that accrues to Sri Radha by a realization of the sweetness of his love, took his birth like the ocean, like the moon in the ocean of the womb of Sri Sachi Devi. The esoteric desire of Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu is herein made manifest. In the Veda it is also said, quote, let me tell you the mystery. In Navadvipa, the identical realm of Goloka, on the banks of the Ganges, Gaurachandra, who is Govinda, the entity of pure cognition, who has two hands, who is the soul of all souls, who has the supreme great personality as the great meditative sannyasin, and who is beyond the threefold mundane attributes, makes the process of pure unalloyed devotion manifest in this mundane world. He is soul Godhead. He is the source of all forms, the supreme soul, and is Godhead manifesting himself in yellow, red, blue, and white colors. He is the... So that would mean the Yuga avatars are expanding from Lord Chaitanya. So in other words, the idea to pick up the living entities from the material world, that's the mood of Krishna, taking Radharani's mood to pick them up, because she's the one, she is the devotee and everyone else's assistant, so to pick up her assistance. Right? But it's Krishna who then can liberate you from that position. So then when Krishna takes that mood, then it all happens. Right? Then that means other yuga avatars expand from Lord Chaitanya. Hence, they're also in that Swetadu.
Also, there is this aspect which is explained in Prema Samputa about the nature of that pure love is when, especially in Madhurya Bhava, is when both the personalities know exactly the mind, they fully are in what you can say,
synchronized
with each other's thought, desires at that level. So Krishna, these three aspects are Krishna then following and maintaining that synchrony with Radharani's desire is that the whole Swetadipa or Navadipa Bhava
is manifest. Yeah, because she expands it actually.
Yeah.
She's actually Navadvip. She expands Vrindavan. It's Navadvip. So therefore, it's not different.
Basically, there's a whole. It's a part of that Madhurya Bhava in itself that this expansion is inherent in it because of this aspect of the nature of that rasa. Nature of
Madhurya Rasa. Yeah, I guess this is based on that Madhurya Rasa and it's Adi Rasa. And it's based on that feeling of oneness.
Yes.
It's two feeling one, so then at the same time the realms are going to be like that. They're two, but they're one. No? He is the direct entity of pure cognition, full of the spiritual chit potency. He is the figure of the devotee. He is the bestower of devotion and cognizable by devotion alone. The self-same Gaurachandra, who is no other than Krishna himself, in order to taste the rasa of the pastimes of Radha Krishna and Goloka, is manifest in the eternal realm of Navadvip, identical with Goloka. I wonder if this is Chaitanya Upanishad. This is also clear from the Vedic declaration, namely, Asan Varnas Traya Krishna Varnam Tvisha Krishnam Yata Pashya Pashyati Rukma Varnam Mahan Prabhur Vai, and various other statements of the theistic scriptures. Just as Sri Krishna had his birth in the mundane Gokula through the agency of Yoga Maya, who is the primal energy of the Supreme Lord, so with her help he manifests the lila of his birth in the womb of Sachi Devi and Navadri on this mundane plane. These are the absolute truths of spiritual science and not the outcome of the imagery or imaginary speculation under the thraldom of the deluding energy of Godhead. Brahma Samhita 5.5 purport. That's a thraldom.
No suggestions from the dictionary.
But thrall means you're enthralled. But thraldom, that means that so people get into karma jnana, it's because they're enthralled by those. If they speculate, they're enthralled by speculation. So the inductive method, they're enthralled that they can speculate, think this and that, put it all together as they like. Because that's the thing, there's no rule how you put it together. How the thought pattern works and how it goes, as long as you show the logic of it and you can give supporting evidence that it has some kind of a basis in some kind of pratyaksha. Right, then it's valid, because it may be what you present is completely different from others, but if you can give that, it'll be accepted, because they're enthralled by speculation, so the more variety, the better. Okay. Did I mention, okay, Brahma Samhita 5.5 purport. So that ends that. That's far out. That then the Veda mentions about that, and that that's the source of the avatars and all that. Well,
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai.